Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the OIG Roundtable. Still your host, Eric Rubenstein, Senior Director of Litigation, Fraud, Waste, and Abuse, here with my two partners in crime, Wade McFall, Retired Assistant Special Agent in Charge from the LA Field Office and a manager on our SIU team, and Matt Kachansky, currently the Payment Integrity Director here and the retired Northeast UPIC Director and the retired Special Agent in Charge. A lot of titles. So, you know, today we want to talk about a pretty timely topic. It's not necessarily case related. I know we've been talking for the past few weeks about some of the cases out there. Great feedback, by the way, we got on our longer podcast last week where we discussed the big takedown that went in the 300-plus defendants in that case. And today we want to talk a little bit about something that kind of directly ties into that from an SIU perspective, and that is drive-bys and physical surveillance. We're not talking about on-sites. We've talked a lot about them. We'll revisit on-sites again in the near future, but we want to talk about sort of the two sides of the story involving physical surveillance. And when we talk about physical surveillance, we're talking about going to a place and sitting outside and taking stock of what's going on and the like. We're not really talking about going in and doing on-site type physical surveillance where you're going in and kind of, you know, poking around the place. And the pluses and the minuses, we've had some great successes with physical surveillance. We have a team of people. We have a partner around the country where we're doing physical surveillance around the country for in the payer space. And we've got some great successes on that. And Wade, I want to start with you because, you know, taking away the OIG piece and the fact that we've been, you know, OIG agents, you get training in how to do these kinds of things. Number one thing that we want to make sure that, you know, goes on, obviously, in the SIU space is it should be the right people doing this. And Matt will talk a little bit about that from that perspective when we talk about the fact that you should have the right people doing this. It should just not be any old person in the SIU. But there are a lot of benefits from doing a physical surveillance. And there's two kinds of surveillance, right? There's a drive-by to confirm the place is real and that it's there. And there's also the static, right, where you're sitting there and you're doing some of that stuff. And so let's talk about, and the important piece of this is that you can stop fraud sooner than later, right? Because you use data to identify your spikes and then you do some surveillance. So talk a little about what are some of the benefits of going and doing a drive-by or even a static surveillance from that perspective in the SIU and how you can sort of stop that fraud earlier.
Yeah, well, I think there's like two main benefits, but so I'll talk about that first, but there's some issues with like not necessarily backstopping like undercover, but there's different kind of requirements for a drive-by, which you can do, you know, if you're going to drive by a building and keep moving there, it's a pretty low threat area. Like, it's just like you can be driving by and if you just need to look and confirm that there's signage there or whatever may be in the drive-by situation, that's pretty easy to do. There are still some liabilities that we talked about before we started this call. But so just a strict drive-by where you're confirming something, the fact that there's a place there that maybe you can tell if there's people or not, that may go more into the static where there's a little bit more of a danger level or threat level. But you can buy, if there's a place where you can park that's not so obvious, you're burning yourself, maybe a neighboring restaurant, fast food place or something like that, where you can be there without, you know, raising too many flags, as opposed to, you know, a surveillance van in the parking lot of a shady clinic. You know, that's two different, again, threat levels there. But the static surveillance, you are able to probably gain a little bit more intel as far as, you know, if they're billing for a lot of visits, you know, there's supposed to be, just one example is if it's an adult daycare center, for example, there should be a lot of people coming and going. There should be a lot of people there. Most likely there's some kind of a van or something like that, dropping people off, picking people up. And if you're able to find a spot where you can sit there and observe this and take detailed notes, and you can affirmatively say after the fact that on this day when, you know, they billed for whatever X amount, 100 members that were supposed to be there for 6 hours, and you can sit there and say, I sat in the parking lot adjacent to that and nobody showed up. That's pretty good intel. It takes a little bit more to do that than just a drive by to confirm whether or not there's signage or if the building actually exists. The other issue I think it's important to point out with the static surveillance, a lot of times, again, going back to the danger kind of element of it, it can have almost nothing to do with the place that you're trying to surveil. If you're in the wrong neighborhood, driving the wrong type of car, we used to do, not to go to the OIG, but we used to do a lot of surveillances. And for a while there, we had, you know, we had 30 cars in LA and 26 of them were Malibus with black windows. If you have a bunch of blacked out Malibus sitting around a shady clinic, you're burned right there. So less so with an SIU type unit, but just being in the wrong place, the wrong neighborhood, even not surveillance related, we would go to do interviews and you get out of that car and, you know, certain neighborhoods, I just don't fit in. So you might as well be wearing a big sign or a vest that says you're law enforcement. So that's another area to keep in mind. If it's an area that you would normally be in and people like you are there and driving similar cars, but if you're out of your element, it's like the surveillance is burned almost like immediately, really.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I started to smile when you said that because we actually had a situation, when I was at OIG where, you know, when we would replace cars, you would be told, hey, your car is ready, go swap out, get your new car. And you would show up to the lot where the cars would go from General Services Administration and you'd pick up your car. And so you never knew what color or anything it would be. You just know you were turning in your one car for another one, you go get it. And so it was kind of, you know, it was piecemeal. You would do it. And there was one day where we had a range day and everybody shows up and, you know, everybody, there was a change of probably a third of the fleet would be swapped out every year, right? Because every 3 years, the cars would get recycled. And so I remember we went to the range one day and there must have been 20 of us at the range and everybody showed up and probably 18 of the cars were either black or gray or whatever it was, you know, Malibus. And nobody, it wasn't from poor planning on our end. We just didn't, nobody knew because everybody's just going picking up their car and not thinking anything of it. And it was like, oh my God, like you got to be kidding me because it was all the same cars. But, you know, and the thing that is important to note is that, you know, again, if you're doing just a simple drive-by, that might not be a problem. If you're doing something static, it might be. And at the end of the day, remember, the place that you're surveilling doesn't know that you're an SIU investigator versus law enforcement or whatever. They just know that there's a car sitting in that lot that they've never seen before or that they don't recognize. And particularly if you're not a professionally trained surveillance professional and know where to park and how to blend in, how to use mirrors properly. If you're using a camera, how to do that. You know, I could tell you, you know, again, not to make too many war stories, but, you know, I was with another agent. We were doing a surveillance on a case. And the provider pulled up in his car because he had seen us there for hours on end, you know, kind of sitting where we were. And he pulled up and blocked us in, got out of the car and started making a bunch of threats. And he knew he was under investigation. I got out of the car. He said, you know, he recognized me. And he basically told me if I showed up at his property that he would kill me. And he was pretty serious about it. So, you know, you never know. You use wrong place, wrong time. And so, you want to be careful about that. And then, of course, you know, the liabilities, and we're going to flip over to Matt to talk about those because there are liabilities. And I don't think that people really think about this. But, you know, first and foremost, Matt, from a liability perspective, is in the SIU space, you know, investigators are typically not trained to do physical surveillance, whether it be static or dynamic. Plans don't typically have cars that are pool cars and things of that. So let's talk about first the things that you have to be cautious about and why using a third party is more beneficial. And then let's talk about the sort of the heavy hitter ROI that you're going to be able to get from sometimes doing these.
Sure. Yeah, there has to be, I guess, operational readiness and awareness before you do these things. Let's start off with the car. In an SIU, what car are you going to be taking to go do a drive-by or a static surveillance? Is it your car? Is it your POV with your license plate on it? What happens if you get in an accident on your way there, or you run over somebody, or someone recognizes what you are doing because you're taking pictures out the window with your Apple iPhone, or and they take us, you know, they take offense because, you know, you shouldn't be doing that, and they hit your windshield with a hammer. Those are areas of liability and fiscal vulnerability that if you've got your own car there, you are in a world of trouble. Now, you're using it for a purpose, probably not under your insurance, because you're using it for a professional purpose. It's not a fleet vehicle that's, you know, meant for that and insured for that. So that's an issue. You yourself are probably financially vulnerable if something happens. If you get in an accident and there's damages to another vehicle, who covers that? Are you going to cover that as an individual? Probably, because you are not covered to do it as part of your responsibility. So all of that has to be taken into consideration. Other things are, you know, what do you do when you get there? You know, what are you looking for? You know, are you prepared to look for the things necessary? You know, there are professional outfits out there, you know, the background checks, the, you know, the on-site contractors that CMS has, what we do, where we've got checklists of what we're supposed to be looking for. If it's a DME company, these are the things we're going to be looking for. If it's a home health agency or an adult daycare center, what are we going to be looking for in the structure of the building itself? Is it accessible to people? You know, is there a ramp for wheelchairs? Is for a DME company, is there a ramp for wheelchairs? Is there signage up? Is it big enough to carry the inventory that you see the billings for? You know, is it a billion catheters, or is it wheelchairs? Is the building even big enough to have wheelchairs in it?
Right.
All of those things you have to take into consideration before you even start this thing. And so I think handing those responsibilities off to someone else and still getting the job done is the way to do it, because the benefits are huge. You know, you go to a, you know, a DME company, or you go to a adult daycare center, or you go to you know, a home health agency, and either it's not there, it's closed, there's no access for patients. The building, we've had them where their buildings were condemned and they're still saying they're an active adult daycare center. Those short circuit your cases, and you have an immediate, you know, ROI, because of you can just go after the funds at that point, just based on that right. Very short-lived drive-by that you've done.
And you know, the thing that's interesting is, and Wade, I want to go back to you for a minute, because you remember that we had a project a number of years ago when you first came to advise, where you went to Hawaii and there was an adult daycare issue. And one of the allegations, you know, we were working on behalf of the provider, but one of the allegations against the provider was that a surveillance investigator from a law enforcement organization went and sat outside of a place for a day and identified that no people were there that day, and was like, aha, we got you. And what it turned out, right, Wade, what was the punchline?
It was the same building, but it was the wrong entrance to the building. And it was basically another suite he was watching. It wasn't the suite. The other side of the building had people coming and going, arguably all day, but he was at the wrong side place. Of the building. Yeah.
And part of that was very likely the fact that the person doing it wasn't well trained on that. You know, and we see these things happen, but you know, one of the pieces of the puzzle is being in the right place at the right time. If your data shows that the clinic's got its busiest days are Monday, Wednesday, Friday, why would you go sit on a Tuesday or a Thursday, right? So some of that is the data. So Matt, going back to you, so for, you know, from an ROI perspective, you know, I know we love to go back and talk about the $50,000 a year wig shop that was then the $1 billion catheter place, right? And maybe that's not so obvious. But, you know, one of the things that our surveillance group has the ability to do is, outside of doing dynamic and static surveillance, they also have the ability to establish recording systems that will record the comings and goings outside of the public. And then you're taking away the human element of that. And the important piece of taking out the human element is we see constantly instances of people with their phones recording things that happen on the street in full public view, no problem. But what we often see is people coming up and making a stink about it, and a stink meaning people getting into physical altercations, even though you are absolutely within your rights to take out your iPhone and put it up, or your Android phone and put it up and video whatever's going on in the public space. It's sometimes going to be the result is going to sometimes be to the ire, disgust, or dismay of the person, you know, that you're recording. And that presents a whole other set of issues. Professionally trained surveillance investigators know how to deal with those things. But also in the SIU space, SIUs oftentimes don't have the technological equipment, a good digital camera with a great zoom lens so you can sit far away, off-site recording capabilities, you know, that are Wi-Fi or cell phone, tower related, where you can put up pole cameras and things of that sort. But really, at the end of the day, Matt, once you've identified an anomaly in the data and you send someone out to do the surveillance, we know from one of our clients that we did this for recently, their ROI was through the roof because we identified the fact that on a particular day, nobody went to the clinic and the clinic submitted bills for thousands and thousands of dollars for services that were irrefutably false. You didn't need to do anything. We had billing data that said on this day, 100 people went for methadone treatment or whatever it was a substance abuse clinic. And we had irrefutable evidence that on that day, nobody was there. And it wasn't, you know, like back to Wade's scenario, it wasn't a situation where there were three entrances and they missed the entrance. It was one entrance and it was where people would come and go. And we knew it was one entrance because our surveillance investigator was there on other days and saw people coming in and out. So they established it. But the ROI was through the roof. And I think this gets to the heart of the conversation when we talk to people in the industry. How do we stop the fraud sooner than later? When we don't have medical records.
When you don't have medical records, yeah. This is one way. There's public source or open source information you can use. I mean, when we did the adult daycare center, we looked on realtor.com and the tax assessment site for the city that we were looking at to find what was that building zoned for. We got pictures of it on Google Earth to show that it was condemned. We didn't have access for anyone there. We got the square footage of the space that they rented to show that it didn't have the possible capacity to handle the numbers of people they were billing for coming in every day. All of that can be done through open source research, social media types of research. All of those things can be done absent data and absent medical review. Take a look at enrollment into your plan. Is there spikes in certain types of providers to go out? And then let's take a look at those right away before the billings even start coming in. Why are these providers all of a sudden enrolling at once? You know, is there a reason for it? And who are they? How are they related to each other? Go take a look at the billings. Do they have the capacity to do what they're saying they're going to be doing? And you can stop that stuff up front before you start chasing the losses and having to do the traditional pay and chase investigations.
Right. And the other part of it too, you know, we talk a lot about tangible and intangible ROI. There's a little bit of an intangible ROI here, which is that if your investigators are out doing this, they're not able to push their other cases in a forward manner. But the collateral piece of this is that if your investigator is out and something does happen, which creates a liability, your ROI is gone and it's costing you money, right? You know, and you brought this up, Matt. If you have an employee using their personal car, are you having to now reimburse them for mileage and tolls? And you might have to do that either way. You know, we have those as pass-through costs. So you're having to pay for that in some regards anyway, for some of the work. But the more important thing is, if your investigator, your SIU investigator, gets into an accident the costs could be insurmountable if they've suffered actual injuries. Medical costs for the investigator, medical costs for the people from the accident. How does workman's comp factor into this? Do you have, is the workman's comp policy covering this? Because this is outside of the norm of maybe what their job description says or what the policy of the organization is. What about if the, you know, forget even the accident piece of it, but what if someone takes your plate down and has a connection with someone, you know, license plate information is publicly available. You can buy it. If anybody gets an account to LexisNexis or Clear or any of those, or you know anybody with one, you can buy this information. You can get plate information. It's not that hard to do. So now the bad guy knows your name, your car registration. What if the car is registered in a spouse's name and you're the investigator? Now they've got the, you know, the name and address of your spouse or someone, who knows? Like, you can continue to go on. And I don't want to be a doomsday person, but you always have to think in terms of what is the risk mitigation and the liability of all of this. And then really you have to think about from a liability, from a litigation perspective, you know, which is where my brain is always, is when you've got something that comes through and this goes to some sort of litigation and your SIU investigator is on the stand and they're talking about what they did and the defense attorney, and none of it may be wrong and heaven forbid something bad happens, but then you've got a defense attorney who's going to do nothing but grill your SIU investigator for a half an hour about their training in surveillance or their lack of training. And wait a minute, you took these pictures with your iPhone. And, you know, how do you know that these pictures, the metadata, how do we know it wasn't manipulated? And all of these things where, you know, keeping in mind that if you are recording or taking a picture, that becomes evidence. Do you have an evidence log? How is it being tracked? Time and date stamping. If you're using your personal phone, how are you getting those pictures or video from your personal phone to where it needs to be, right?
That opens up your phone to discovery, not just the pictures you took on the surveillance, but everything in it.
Right. What have you done with your phone? Is your phone is now evidence, right? What if you did these videos and pictures and your case doesn't go to litigation for a year and you've replaced your phone? What happens? The evidence no longer exists. You have a digital record of it. Now in the federal space, a digital, you know, best evidence rule, it will work. But a defense attorney is going to create an environment that it doesn't need to create. From an SIU perspective, and if you're doing this, do you have separate equipment that your staff can check out? Do you have a digital camera with a telephoto lens? How are you tracking that? Is there a check-in and check-out system? Is there somebody that's managing the dissemination of that equipment? These are all things that we don't really think about from that perspective, but a defense attorney is going to think about these things, and a defense attorney is going to scrutinize them. And even if none of these things are being done wrong, there is nothing worse than sitting on the stand for hours being grilled about something that's a nothing burger, but the entire purpose of that is to do nothing more than rattle you for the purpose of getting you to say something that you didn't intend to say because they've rattled you. That is a common practice from defense attorneys. I can't tell you how many times I've been on the stand where I spent 45 minutes talking about an interview report that I wrote where literally one word in the report was different than the word in the interview notes, or vice versa, or my interview notes had one day on it and my report was written up 4 days later. Why did you wait 4 days? A half an hour, 45 minutes of that. For nothing, for actually nothing. And it is something to consider about. So I think that doing a physical drive-by is a very, very important piece of the SIU investigative continuum. And outside of the pieces of the puzzle that Matt talked about, right, the open source intelligence, which you should be doing if you think that there's something really afoot, is considering having these third-party drive-bys. I mean, I think with the one client that we did this, one very large, and we've done these on smaller scales, but the one client that we did this for on a large scale, they stopped potentially, I think, millions of dollars from going out the door because they were able to shut this place down based upon one day of surveillance where no one showed up, where they had really irrefutable evidence that suggested that people went there during a day when our surveillance investigator was able to definitively confirm that no one was there and shut them down and said, you're out, you're out. Let them come back and fight it, but at least you stop. You've done what we like to talk about. Stop and verify. We knew the day. We put a flag on those claims through the payer for that day. Those claims came in. We said, not so fast. And did a stop and verify. So we're doing it with a little bit of a different twist, right? Because it's not a prepay in that traditional sense of putting a provider on prepay, getting the records or pay, you know, and then certainly not a pay and chase. It's definitely a novel approach to the way that you can stop money from going out the door. But you have to have one of two things. You either have to have a third party that's going to go out and do it for you at a reasonable cost to make sure that your ROI is still there, or you've got to have some really strong policies in place on how you're going to do it in-house, coupled with having proper training on how to get this done in a manner that's going to be safe and efficient. You can't just send your investigators out willy-nilly to do it. You know, a broken clock is right twice a day. And while most of the time nothing will go wrong, you don't want to have, you know, as Wade puts it, wrong place, wrong time, or right place, wrong time. You just don't want to have that as a scenario. And we can all come up with scenarios in our prior lives where, you know, there was like a what the heck moment that went on. And you don't want to have that happen with, you know, with a team of SIU investigators who aren't trained with how to deal with these things, aren't trained with where to position themselves properly or anything like that. So it's food for thought. I think it's a great alternative. You really can have a very high ROI, which is at the end of the day in the SIU space, in some cases, what it comes down to. But it's making sure that you've got the right people, because it's always going to come down to training, right? So it's right people, right training, and that's where you're going to end up with having a good ROI, do it in a safe, effective, and efficient manner, and be able to prove your case. And in some cases, it's going to be with a physical person being there. In other cases, it's going to be with the use of technology. If we rely upon technology for our data analytics, why can't we rely on technology for other things? You know, we all have doorbell cams, AI, it sees us, it unlocks the door. You know, we can employ that, you know, we can employ technology to the SIU space outside of the analytics and outside of that open source technology. So food for thought, something to think about. We're here to help with that. We're here to help with creating SOPs and policies that will work to create the best return on investment for these things. So important piece of the puzzle. We're seeing more and more of our clients here at Advisor asking about that and how that all works and having those conversations. So, you know, we're going to continue to see what we can do to help with that at a cost-effective, in a cost-effective way. So, and, you know, final piece is, Wade, thanks for getting the memo. Matt, we'll let you go because I'm sure it's in the laundry, and that's the reason why you didn't wear it. So we'll let you go.
This is my laundry day shirt. Is that what you're saying?
It's laundry day, and only 5 months to Christmas, so new socks and underwear are on the way. All right, guys. As always, it's good to see you, and as always, great to have everybody who tunes in and enjoys the podcast. We appreciate it. Again, sign up for the newsletter and get it directed to your inbox on Fridays. And catch this recording every week on YouTube, Spotify, and on LinkedIn. And until the next time, we'll see you on the next OIG Roundtable. Take care, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.